element of the international security arrangements foreseen by the framers of the Treaty of Versailles. A demilitarized Rhineland, and initially with Allied troops stationed there, would mean that should Germany decide to take an adventurous course in the future, should it decide to seek revenge, should it become aggressive, the Allies would possess this key territory on the west bank of the Rhine. It would be an easy jump to attack the Ruhr, the industrial heartland of Germany, and then to drive on to Berlin. It made Germany vulnerable to the Allies and gave France, in particular, a real weapon to use against German adventurism. Also, and I think this also was for the Germans, a real blow and indicative of or symptomatic, really, of the entire treaty. The treaty, and certainly the run-up to it, was supposed to embody notions of national self-determination of peoples. Frustrated nationalism, Wilson and others believed, had been one of the major factors in the outbreak of the first of this great war. However, in 1919, when the Austrian state had collapsed, the Habsburg monarchy driven from the throne, Austria left as what might be called Rump Austria, that is German Austria, stated its spokesman indicated a desire to become part of Germany, that Germany and this Austrian state would simply merge. The Allies prevented this, forbade it absolutely, even though it flew in the face of national self-determination of peoples, and I think with the perfectly understandable reasoning, which was that France and England had not fought from 1914 to 1918 against this German Reich, only to see Germany become larger than it had been in 1914. So an Anschluss between, or a linkage between Germany and Austria was forbidden by the victorious Allies in 1918-1919. This, once again, was taken by the Germans as overwhelming evidence of the bad faith of the Allies, that these high-flown principles that Wilson and others had trotted out when convenient were simply put aside when those principles would work to Germany's advantage. There was a similar case in an area of Silesia, a coal mining area of Silesia, where a plebiscite clearly indicated that the majority of people preferred to be German, and the territory was ceded to Poland instead. I think even at the conference, Lloyd George, the Prime Minister in Britain, became a bit nervous about the terms of the treaty, and one begins already to see British concern about the terms of the treaty, that indeed it might be just a bit harsh. When he came under criticism for his willingness to go along with Clemenceau's demands, his unwillingness to stand up for Wilson or for some sort of more moderate course, Lloyd George responded, "Well, I did the best I could. After all, I was seated between Jesus Christ on the one hand and Napoleon Bonaparte on the other, and this was the best I could do." This conflict between Wilson and Clemenceau had clearly resulted in a victory for Clemenceau, but the combination was particularly poisonous, I think. Harsh terms, draconian terms, dictated terms, couched in high-flown rhetoric of Wilsonian idealism. And it was this, I think, that made, among many other things, that made the treaty so unpalatable to the Germans. Indeed, the Germans maintained that the treaty was not in any way a kind of negotiation. This was a dictated peace that the German government was not ever allowed to voice its opinion, was not allowed to negotiate. Germans of all political leanings, from the far left to the far right, all resented the provisions of the Treaty of Versailles. It was seen as a catastrophic and immoral treaty. Even the German, the Social Democratic government, which ultimately would sign the treaty, its representatives resigned rather than initially signing the treaty.